to a night with John Martin. And look where he was now. In the middle of nowhere, jogging in a haycart on the friendliest terms with George Charnage's son. Lord Hugo would have an apoplexy. Lord Hugo was excessively careful, the Duke decided. Dazel might be erratic, but he was immensely likable. He'd behaved with notable courage and decency, and anyway, the terms of the bet obliged the Duke to take a holiday from ducal behaviour. There was nothing more to it, and he would call his companion Dazel without further thought. Or even Daze. Dazel was a magical sort of name that matched his dazzling head of metallic hair, all copper and gilt like coins spilt on a counter. But Daze felt like a friend intimate enough to be casual with, a man with whom one shared a bottle, perhaps slept on his settle after a long night's play. He'd like to have a friend he called Daze. He'd like to have a friend who called him Cass. He'd never asked anyone to do so before now because nobody in the world was on first-name terms with him. The Duke had been Harmsford since his birth. He had become seven at the age of six, and that was his name now, when he wasn't Your Grace. A very few people called him Sev, and while he'd be perfectly happy if more did, one couldn't demand that people called one by an intimate nickname. For that, they had to feel intimacy. And neither his position nor his reserved character invited that. But Dazel had asked if his name was abbreviated, and the Duke's heart had thumped with a sensation he couldn't name as he'd said, lied, that it was, and all but invited him to it. Call me Cass. He knew this wasn't quite fair. He'd tried not to tell more outright lies than he could help. But everything he said to Dazel was at least a lie of omission. Surely it did no harm, though. This way they could be on friendly terms, chatting easily, exchanging jokes. The Duke didn't have that with many people, and for an obviously gregarious, outgoing man, Dazel didn't seem to have much of it either. He looked genuinely happy to have company, and the Duke would take that away from him if he told the truth. And, he had to admit, he'd also have to behave differently himself and certainly not do things like stare at Dazel's bare torso, the skin wet, gleaming with copper-gold curls. Thank goodness Dazel hadn't noticed his momentary fascination. Cass? It didn't even register for a second. Dazel prodded him in the side. Cass! He sat up. Cass. That was his name on this journey. What is it?
We're here. Were you asleep?
Half. The Duke, Cassian, he reminded himself, looked around. The light was fading and they were approaching a neat sort of inn. Where are we?
The Baron's staff, I understand, some miles outside Stratford, and that's all I can tell you.
They clambered down with their bags. Cassian both resented the weight of his and wished he'd brought a lot more clothes. He would have to ask about laundry. Habit told him to stand back while all was made ready for him. Humility reminded him that Dazel knew far better than he did how to command an innkeeper's attention. There was nothing wrong with accepting help as long as one gave it to. And it was very tempting to let someone else arrange matters for him as he always had. But Dazel glanced at him and gave a little wave to usher him forward. So he plucked up his courage and went in. It turned out that commanding was not required. The Baron's staff was no busy coaching inn, and its landlord was obsequious in his delight at their custom. Of course they could have rooms for the night, and he would have the sheets warmed right away. Dinner, why, the best they could serve. He regretted to his very soul that he had no fine wines to offer, only elderflower wine of his wife's making, unless perhaps the gentleman would prefer ale. Cassian chose the ale, having noted Dazel's eyes widen in alarm at the mention of elderflower wine. And they were ushered to a tiny but very pleasant parlour where they both collapsed into chairs.
Your health, Dazel said, raising his tankard. Good God, what a day.
It has been long and eventful.
And I regret to say with all the delay we might have lost the trail.
I know, it can't be helped. We'll get on our way to Stratford tomorrow, it's all we can do. And if we can't track him from there, we can...
He wasn't quite sure what they could do. He looked hopefully at Daisel.
We'll work something out, his companions said with cheerful confidence. There's always the Gloucester pawn shops.
Yes, exactly. We've only lost a day, really.
And we can't do anything at all about that now, so we might as well enjoy the evening.
Daisel held out his tankard and Cassian clinked it with his. They did enjoy it. The landlord served them a very satisfactory meal. Plain cooking, but good. And the seasoning of hunger and physical exertion made it delicious. Cassian ate with relish and enjoyed watching Daisel wolf his meal. And halfway down his second mug of ale, he felt as comfortable as he'd been in his life. That was when they heard the noise outside the parlour.
I understand that, miss, but I've only one parlour and it is commanded already by two gentlemen,
the landlord, pleading.
Gentlemen will understand that a lady's needs come first,
a young man's voice, trying for firmness.
But the gentlemen have commanded.
Then they must be disappointed. I have a lady here.
A lady? Not a wife?
That was a female voice. Tone ominous. Daisel, who was eavesdropping as shamelessly as Cassian, gave him a gleeful look and mouthed, "Landlady," while tapping the fourth finger of his left hand. Cassian blinked, then understood a second later as the young man said,
"No, that is not your wife. Your sister, then?
No, I mean, yes,
the young man added, and then,
no. No? And now attendant with you, miss?"
The landlady's voice was rising.
"This is a respectable house. I won't stand for any nonsense."
"We came by a misfortune on the journey," the young man said, sounding somewhat harassed.
"And I'm asking you to provide a private room and two bedchambers and an attendant for the lady tonight."
"Our girl could," the landlord began.
"Our girl won't be assisting at an elopement," his wife said over him, "and I won't have any such thing here. This is a respectable house."
Daisel pulled a face that economically conveyed that he was glad not to be in the young man's shoes. Cassian murmured,
"We could surely, for a lady,
if you don't mind the public bar, very gracious of you," Daisel said with a wink that quivered pleasantly in Cassian's nerves. He went to the door, pulled it open, and went into the hallway.
"I beg your pardon, but we couldn't help overhearing. My companion and I, oh my God."
"You,"
said a young lady's voice, in accents of throbbing accusation.
"What's this?"
the landlady demanded. Daisel retreated rapidly backwards into the parlour. A young lady came after him with a sturdy young man on her heels. She was well built herself for a woman about Cassian's size and wore a fierce expression. He looked as though incomprehension was his natural state.
"You," she said again. "What are you doing here? Have you followed me?"
"Followed?" Daisel said. "I've been here for hours, and why would I want to see you anyway?"
"He has been here with me," Cassian added, with no idea what was going on, but feeling he should offer support. "We've had dinner here, as this good woman can—" The young lady waved at him to be silent with an impatient gesture. Cassian reminded himself, after a stunned moment of outrage, that he was not currently the Duke of Severn.
"Well, what are you doing here if you are not following me?"
she asked Daisel insistently.
"Pursuing my own affairs," Daisel said. "Yours, as you made quite clear, are not my concern."
"Eliza," the youth said, "who is this man?"
"Do be quiet, Tony."
The landlord and landlady had both crowded in. The extremely small parlour was now feeling decidedly cramped. Daisel had retreated behind a chair, whether to make space or to have something between him and the young lady's militant stance.
"If you are not following me," she began,
"I am not."
"If you aren't, then what do you want?"
"I was going to offer you the parlour," Daisel said. "I regret the impulse."
"You were?"
The young lady's face underwent an instant transformation, from hostility to bright spring day.
She wasn't pretty, Cassian thought, being rather ordinary in features, much as he was himself, with mousy brown hair and a pair of grey eyes. But she moved and spoke with such animation that one might easily be convinced she was very pretty indeed.
Oh, Mr. Charnage, how very kind. Well, that is wonderful and resolves all.
It does nothing of the sort, miss, because if this is an elopement, the landlady began.
The young man came in over her.
Charnage, this is Charnage, what's he doing here?
We've been over this, Daisel said. Why don't my friend and I leave you the parlour and you can finish your conversation with mine hosts? Get your drink, Cass.
Wait a minute, sir.
The young man skirted around to block the door with a threatening look. He was quite sturdy.
I have a few words for you on your conduct.
Don't be absurd, Tony,
the young lady said.
This wretched fellow had no compunction in attempting a young lady in the most disgraceful manner.
What did you call me?
Tony, stop it. I explained this.
You did not know what you were doing,
the young man told her sternly.
And you, sir, took advantage of her.
I eloped with her, you idiot, Daisel said.
And by the looks of things, so have you. The young man lunged. Daisel leapt back out of the way. The young lady squawked. The landlady said,
I knew it.
And Cassian said, stop. Daisel kicked a chair into the path of the oncoming young man, snapping,
for God's sake, you oaf.
Duke of Severn, Cassian reminded himself.
I said, stop this at once.
He gave the words the full authority and command of his noble house and lineage. Nobody even looked at him. The young man grabbed the chair and hoisted it, whether to throw it out of the way or at Daisel, and Cassian, giving up on lineage and remembering illicit brawls with Leo, kicked him hard on the ankle.
Ow!
He dropped the chair and turned on Cassian, and the landlady interposed herself with a bellow of,
That will do!
That was equally ignored. Daisel leapt at the young man, crashing onto him from behind, and the young lady let out a scream. It was not a scream of fear. It was pure ear-splitting noise, like a kettle coming to the boil, and it was so long and loud and piercing that Cassian, reeling away, briefly wondered if the windows would survive. Daisel had his hands clapped over his ears. The angry young man ducked and cringed.
Thank you,
the young lady said into the stunned silence, giving herself a little shake.
Really, what great stupids men are. Be quiet, Tony, you are being nonsensical and jealous, and it is very tiresome. Hostess, please bring me something hot to drink, and expect Tony will like ale.
Young lady, the landlady said, swelling. I will have no brawling in this house, nor elopements either. I don't hold with such things.
I'm not eloping with anyone, Daisel remarked to nobody in particular. The young man shot him an evil look. Cassian said, Ma'am, I quite understand your position, but it's late. Is there anywhere close by for these travellers to go?
Not till Snitterfield, the landlord said, and that's a fair way.
Then, while your principles do you credit, you must see it would be quite wrong to turn away a young lady in the dark. I trust you will find yourself able to admit these guests. Daisel was giving him an odd look, possibly because he didn't want to share an inn with the young lady, but that couldn't be helped. My companion and I will happily relinquish this parlour for the lady's comfort, and as the mother of a daughter, you'll doubtless agree it would be a kindness to give the lady some attendance tonight. The landlady's hands were on her hips, but Cassian thought she might have softened a little at that.
I'll have no fighting and no immorality under my roof.
The young lady blushed a fierce scarlet.
I am not immoral, she said heatedly, and it is very unkind of you to say so.
I think everyone would be better off for a drink, Daisel said. I certainly would if you'd be so kind, landlord. Cass, shall we retire to the other room? The landlady's jaw tightened.
I can't have an unmarried lady and gentleman left alone. This isn't that sort of house, and my girl is busy making up beds.
Then we'll stay in here with them, Cassian said. Nobody could object to that. We will have that ale, please, and tea for the lady. The host and hostess departed,
he dragging out his irate wife. Sounds of marital discord rose from the hallway. The four in the parlour stood in stiff, silent discomfort while ale was produced and the table cleared and a meal ordered. Finally, the landlady put down a pot of tea and marched out of the room. The young lady shut the door behind her.
Goodness, what a tiresome woman. Good evening.
She smiled at Cassian.
Thank you for your kindness. That was most gentlemanly of you. My name is
Eliza, the man said warningly. She glared at him.
What? You might not want to...
He nodded meaningfully.
Don't give your name, Eliza,
Dazel mimicked, with some incredulity.
Good Lord. Also, the lady and I have met, in case you forgot. Miss Beaumont, Mr. Cassian. And this is Tony Marston,
Miss Beaumont said.
Mr. Marston, Mr. Cassian, and Mr. Charnage. So now we can all sit down before I scream.
Don't do that, Dazel said. My nerves couldn't take another of those.
So, Miss Beaumont,
eloping again?
Days, Cassian said.
Dazel took a healthy swig of his drink. In fairness to myself, I should point out,
you need not do any such thing,
Miss Beaumont said hurriedly.
No hard feelings. I have quite forgot the matter.
Dazel mouthed, forgot. Mr. Marston bristled. Miss Beaumont said,
Stop it, Tony. You needn't be a dog in the manger. Mr. Charnage didn't elope with me or I him because we liked one another.
Ouch, Dazel said.
Although not inaccurate.
So are you eloping again?
Well, yes, actually,
Miss Beaumont said in a confiding tone.
You can't blame me, can you?
Cassian couldn't help a surreptitious glance at Mr. Marston. Dazel gave the man an openly examining look, then shrugged.
No accounting for taste.
Dazel, Cassian said louder, but Miss Beaumont gurgled.
You are dreadful. And I am sorry for saying you had followed me. I was so startled, and to be honest, I've been jumping at shadows all day. The fact is, oh, don't be stupid, Tony. He already knows most of it, and I dare say we can trust his friend, and if we can't, it's too late anyway. You are a gentleman, sir. You would not betray a confidence.
No, indeed, Cassian said warily.
You see, the fact is that, as Mr. Charnage well knows, I am fleeing intolerable persecution. My only means of escape was to elope with Tony. That's why I eloped with Mr. Charnage.
Cassian nodded sympathetically and then said, What? Tell you later, Dazel said.
And I have finally managed to get out again, so we are on our way to be married.
At Gretna? She put up her small chin.
At Gretna. I'm terribly afraid that Sir James will have us followed, and when I saw Mr. Charnage, I panicked. But you will help us, won't you?
No, Dazel said.
That is, I'm not going to stand in your way, but as for helping, we've an urgent concern of our own. I'm hardly asking much,
Miss Beaumont said, her expressive face flicking to a mask of big-eyed pleading.
Only that you don't let anyone know that you saw us or where we have gone.
If you want to pass unnoticed, you should make your arrivals less dramatic, Dazel pointed out.
Everyone in this inn will be talking about you for weeks. Why don't you have a story to explain your situation?
He waved a hand at the obviously unmarried lady travelling alone with a man.
Not a story, an attendant, Cassian said. Clearly you need... Don't be ridiculous,
Miss Beaumont said over him.
An attendant on an elopement? What for, to lend me countenance? I am going to get married, and if I can't, I should rather be ruined than go back.
This was not something Cassian could approve, even incognito, given the possible consequences. He was morally obliged to intervene. His heart sank at the thought. The landlord came in at that moment with food for the new arrivals. Cassian seized the opportunity.
I shall get some fresh air while you eat. Dazel, would you accompany me?
The landlord could stay with the couple if he cared about appearances. Dazel swung himself upright with clear reluctance and followed him outside. They stood together a little way from the inn, in the quiet of the country night. An owl hooted above them. It was cold compared to the rather stuffy parlour, and the clear air made Cassian's head swim slightly. Unless that was the strong ale. You probably want an explanation, Daisel said. The thing is, no, wait. Cassian did want an explanation because he was consumed by curiosity. But that wasn't the most important thing. Miss Beaumont, how can we get her back to her home? What? Why would we do that? Because she's eloping. Isn't that her business? No, the Duke said. It's any decent person's duty to intervene to prevent someone making a terrible mistake. It would be bad enough if she marries foolishly, but if she doesn't bring it off and this escapade becomes known, what then? She's clearly gently bred. This could ruin her. She knows that. It's her risk. She's too young to decide that. 20, Daisel said. And surely it's her mistake to make. Do people tell you what mistakes you can and can't make? All the time, yes. Cassian was beginning to feel quite heated. And you listen? I didn't listen when I went off to gamble with John Martin and he robbed me. If someone had intervened to save me from that experience, I should have been very grateful. No, you wouldn't, Daisel said. Because you didn't know he was going to rob you, therefore someone intervening beforehand would, so far as you knew, have merely prevented you from a pleasant evening's play with a friend. I doubt you'd have been happy about that. Any more than Miss Beaumont would be about you taking it on yourself to predict her doom. If someone who knew he was a thief had told me so, you'd have taken their word for it. Do you always let other people pick your friends? Daisel demanded, sounding rather heated himself. Surely you should be able to judge for yourself rather than giving a dog a bad name and hanging him. John Martin deserved hanging, metaphorically, Cassian added in fairness, since he was not an admirer of the laws. That doesn't mean everyone else is a villain. You made a mistake, and you'll learn from it. My mistake lost me my ring, and Miss Beaumont has a great deal more to lose than that. Yes, she does, but I'm not a better judge than her of whom she should marry or how, and I don't see why you are. I don't claim to be. I'm saying that she is committing an indiscreet action she will probably regret, which could easily lead into her shame and distress and hardship. And if there is the opportunity to prevent that, I must surely take it. I can't just let a bad thing happen. You said yourself we should help each other. Daisel was looking at him. Cassian could feel it, although his features were barely visible in the faint light coming from the inn's windows. But it is not your affair. You aren't her friend. You owe her nothing. You only just met her. And I wish I hadn't, Cassian said with feeling. But now I know about this. How can I ignore it? Daisel scrunched his hand into his curls. Easily. We go back inside, finish our drinks, go to bed, and let the woman decide her own life instead of getting embroiled in her ridiculous goings-on, which, I may say, she is going to pursue whatever you or anyone may think of them. It was overwhelmingly tempting. Cassian had absolutely no desire to drag a headstrong woman back to her family home against her will, or embroil himself in what would doubtless be a ghastly mess. The Duke, on the other hand, could only imagine how the news would be received that he had allowed an elopement to proceed under his aegis. "You are 7," Lord Hugo would say. "You have a duty." Surely her family will allow the marriage to take place in the proper manner if it proves a lasting attachment, he said. Or if not, I dare say there is some good reason they don't wish her to marry Marston. There is certainly a reason, and it's not even his beef-wittedness or his deplorable propensity for jealousy, Daisel said. Although I did attempt to run away with his intended bride, so one can't entirely blame him for being testy with me. She's a substantial heiress. Her father was old Giles Beaumont, Golden Giles. Why on earth do you think I agreed to elope with her? Cassian would have liked to interrogate that last, but he had other concerns. Giles Beaumont, the manufacturer. But isn't his daughter Sir James Vere's ward? Vere got his hands on her when Beaumont died and controls her income while she remains unwed. Her fortune only becomes hers on her marriage. It's why he hasn't let her make her come out or any such. She'd be snapped up within a season, and that would incommode Vere very seriously. He intends to claim her hand and thus her fortune for himself, and as her guardian, he's in an excellent position to do so. Cassian spluttered. A girl of her age, in his power, and he's 50 if he's a day. Quite. Do you blame her for escaping? Good God, no. But for heaven's sake, she's playing right into his hands. If she elopes without even a female attendant, and he has to retrieve her again, he added,
because the previous failed elopement had been widely talked about.
She will make herself utterly unmarriageable.
Not with her money.
Unmarriageable to a decent man.
And anyway, it would seem far less of a villainy for Vere to marry his own ward if she so clearly needs to be controlled.
People will say she needs a firm hand, an older man to steady her, that she clearly isn't fit to decide for herself.
Not to mention that people care far less about a wrong done to a woman who is already soiled goods. Daisel made a face.
True. Would you put it past Vere to haul her back home? Let the world know she spent all this time with a man and present himself as saving her reputation by marriage?
I wouldn't put much past him, Daisel said.
You're right that she has got herself in a bad position, but do you really think we should return her to that swine's house?
Of course not. We should help them get to Gretna.
Daisel paused for a second.
Not what I expected you to say, but carry on.
Clearly she should marry Marston, if the alternative is Vere.
Can we help them on their way?
How?
I thought you'd know. You must have some ideas, surely. You've done it before.
Daisel gave him a look.
I don't elope with heiresses as often as you might think.
Just the once, actually, and it wasn't a success.
You seem to have changed your stance on the aiding and abetting of elopement rather rapidly.
I loathe Sir James,
Cassian said with immense feeling. He's a cruel, grasping, malicious brute who abuses his horses, and I would enjoy nothing more than to put a spoke in his wheel. And I should not like to see a young lady in his power, especially if she had crossed him.
If Miss Beaumont was forced back to Sir James, the Duke would unquestionably have to act, now he knew of her plight.
That opened all kinds of ghastly vistas, since people would want to know the reason for the Duke of Severn's interest in a pretty, eligible, unmarried lady. Whereas if she eloped successfully and gained control of her fortune, he could forget about her without guilt. Not to mention that if he could help her now, that would show he could act as himself and not just through his inherited power. He rather liked that idea.
We must aid her, he said firmly. Surely you can think of something.
Daisel sighed. Let's talk to Romeo and Juliet. They returned to the parlour where the young lovers were in the middle of a very pretty row. Mr. Marston sounded aggrieved. Miss Beaumont looked tired, her bravado clearly ebbing.
I beg your pardon, Daisel said, taking a chair. You said you wanted help. I should mention that I have let Cassian know your situation, among friends.
Good,
Miss Beaumont said. Oh, do please stop, Tony.
We've had shocking luck. One of our horses cast a shoe and we got lost. And Sir James will be on our track, and you're quite right that we should have had a better story, and now that horrid landlady will be talking and talking, and of course he will track us down, and I cannot—
She broke off, jaw firming.
I shan't marry Sir James. I will not. I want to live my life and not be kept in that horrible house with that horrible man and have my fortune in his control forever.
Legally speaking, once she married, her money would be controlled by her husband. Cassian didn't trouble to mention that. She doubtless knew.
Sir James won't want to let you slip through his fingers, Daisel said. He made that exceedingly clear on your previous excursion, when I narrowly escaped a horsewhipping, by the way.
I mention that merely for context.
I'm terribly sorry,
Miss Beaumont said politely.
Think nothing of it.
Did either of you tell people where you were going or who with?
No, of course not,
Miss Beaumont said, offended by this slight on her deceptive powers.
In fact, oh.
Oh? Cassian asked, with a slight sinking feeling.
Well, you see, and I do beg you won't be annoyed, but one never knows who's watching in Sir James's house, and I didn't want him to suspect Tony. I needed to lay a false trail before I escaped. So I wrote various letters to you, Mr. Charnage.
She gave Daisel a hopeful look.
I thought you wouldn't mind.
Daisel opened and closed his mouth.
You thought? Well, you had already tried to elope with me, so that made it credible. And you wouldn't have got the letters since I just sent them to an inn, and they will doubtless still be there.
The
The slightest investigation would show you had nothing to do with the matter. It will be quite easy for you to explain.
When Sir James arrived with a horsewhip, you mean?
Oh, you're far younger than him,
Miss Beaumont said bracingly.
I'm sure he couldn't just attack you.
On his own, perhaps not. Unfortunately, he tends to bring large men with him.
That awful groom, oh yes. Oh dear. But the point is, it does seem to me that if he thinks I've run away with you, and he's coming after me, and now you're here with me.
I quite see how that could be made to suit you, Daisel said. It doesn't suit me at all. Well, now, wait, Cassian said. Could it not be a good idea? We didn't give the landlord our names.
If? How would this work? If we say Tony is Mr. Charnage,
Miss Beaumont said,
and he and I leave together and you go elsewhere.
No use, because Sir James will still be pursuing you, Daisel said, which in my opinion is preferable to him being after me. But I can bear witness you haven't eloped with Miss Beaumont, Cassian said. It would be cursed awkward if Vere appeared in person, but at least he could ensure Daisel's safety. Vere wouldn't dare touch a man under his protection. At least, probably not. He had never actually put anyone under his protection and wasn't quite sure how one went about it.
We can have the law on him if he threatens you. Really, that does surely seem to be an opportunity here if we could think how to use it.
He looked around hopefully. So did Miss Beaumont. So did Mr. Marston. They all ended up looking at Daisel. That gentleman sighed the sigh of a badly put upon man.
For goodness sake, all right. Suppose we leave together tomorrow, the four of us, for Stratford-upon-Avon. Before that, Mr. Marston will identify himself as Daisel Charnage here, and inform the landlady that you are to marry in Stratford as soon as the banns are called. Name the church. Does anyone know a church in Stratford?
Holy Trinity, Cassian said.
I believe it was Shakespeare's parish church. Marvellous. You two can chatter happily about your forthcoming literary wedding. Once we get to Stratford, have you money, Miss Beaumont?
Enough. I have been hoarding my pin money for some time.
In Stratford, then, you and I will take a trip to purchase a common license. Consult the vicar of Holy Trinity Church as to how soon banns can be published, and make ourselves memorable doing it. With luck, the pursuit will be diverted in that direction, and Sir James will attempt to track you down in Stratford, and become embroiled in finding me instead. With even more luck, he won't have his big brute with a horsewhip in attendance. Meanwhile, Mr. Marston will organize your journey north. You could go through Birmingham to confuse the trail, though I have always wondered whether one might simply sail up the coast and arrive in Scotland that way. Anyway, you will depart, and we will carry on with our own business, while dropping my name in a casual sort of way to anyone who might be asked, and confusing the trail for long enough that you can disappear. There. Happy now?
I'd also suggest Miss Beaumont hire a chaperone, Cassian said, and recoiled at the look she gave him.
Well, surely Sir James will be asking about a couple, not three people.
Might work, Daisel said.
Alternatively, Miss Beaumont could dress as a boy.
You see,
Miss Beaumont interjected with a significant look at her fiancé.
I told you I should.
No wife of mine.
Save it for the honeymoon, Daisel said.
Dress up, pretend to be siblings, buy a ring and behave like you're married.
Anything but a repeat of tonight's arrival.
Cassian felt obliged to reiterate his point.
Nevertheless, a chaperone.
Yes, thank you,
Miss Beaumont said, unceremoniously dismissing him once again, and turning her glowing face to Daisel.
Thank you, Mr. Charnage, you are quite wonderful. That is so clever and so very kind, and I do hope not to cause you too much trouble. And I am terribly sorry about last time, really. We're both dreadfully grateful.
Marston didn't look grateful, and Daisel didn't look gratified. Cassian glanced between them and said,
I'm glad he could help. I think I'm going to bed.
Chapter 6 There was only one bed.
Cassian hadn't thought of that. Doubtless, if they had a room with two beds, Miss Beaumont would be given it so she didn't have to share with the host's daughter. Or possibly vice versa.
It was quite normal to share as a travelling expediency, he knew, if one wasn't a duke entitled to always have the best room entirely to himself. He was not currently a duke, so he was going to share a bed with Daisel, to be asleep next to him. That might have presented more of a problem if he wasn't so tired he could die from it. The long day, the accident, the long walk, and the ale were all catching up with him now, and he found himself swaying as he washed. The lamplight was dim, and he couldn't tell if he'd need to shave in the morning or it was just the speckled mirror. "You look dog-tired," Daisel remarked, sitting on the bed. "Are you always this chivalrous?" "Chivalrous? Give up the room, save the lady from herself, save the lady from the villain?" "I don't think any of that's chivalry, it's just responsibility." "You don't have a responsibility to her." Cassian sat on the other side of the bed to wrestle his boots off. He had his back to Daisel, but he could feel the heat of his body a couple of feet away, or imagined he could. "You didn't have a responsibility to anyone in that coach."
"That was an emergency. Most people help in a dramatic situation, if only to be part of the drama. People aren't so ready to do the same for day-to-day situations. A child with holes in his boots, a man in need of dinner." He wasn't speaking with his usual cheer. Cassian pulled his shirt over his head, feeling rather snubbed. "I dare say you're right, though I don't really want to be part of Miss Beaumont's drama at all. I suppose I got carried away when Veer came into it. I saw him thrashing his horses once, and we had the most appalling row." "Good for you," Daisel said, "though risky. I heard the Duke of Severn once squabbled with him on the subject, and Veer chased him off with his tail between his legs. But I didn't mean to imply that you were inserting yourself into Miss Beaumont's affairs for entertainment. You were clearly trying to do a good thing. I still don't think Miss Beaumont's affairs are any of your business or mine, and I bet we, or at least I, come to regret interfering. But Veer is an utter swine, and I suppose if we can help a little, we might as well. And I also think you're a very generous man." That brought more blood to his cheeks, but this time pleasantly. "Oh, well, I wouldn't say that." The bed creaked as Daisel twisted, and he felt a warm hand on his bare arm. "I would." Cassian wanted to turn round, desperately. He searched for some response. "Do you think we'll come to regret it? That this runaway marriage is a bad idea?" "I dare say Marston will be an adequate husband to Miss Beaumont."
Daisel's hand was still resting on Cassian's arm, so casual a touch. "In her shoes, I'd spend my money on an excellent lawyer, but here we are. I was more reflecting that we, specifically I, will regret it very sharply when Sir James Veer and his hulking groom arrive brandishing horsewhips."
"I won't let that happen."
"Will you not?" Daisel said. "Well, that's nice. There's also the small matter of another elopement being ascribed to me. A story which will doubtless do the rounds." Cassian's stomach plunged. He turned without thought of anything else. "Oh, Lord, I didn't think. But of course you will be blamed. Your reputation. Oh, no, we can't allow this." Daisel blinked at him.
"My dear fellow, I was only grumbling. I don't have a reputation, you must know that."
"Yes, but this charge isn't true," Cassian said, and then,
I meant exactly what you said."
Daisel shifted back, turning away to pull off his own shirt.
"Correctly. I am, regrettably, my father's son. And beyond his very considerable contribution, I am the author of my own misfortunes. I did attempt to elope with Miss Beaumont once, so really, what does it matter in the grand scheme of things if people think I did it again? And anyway, it was my idea."
"But it's my fault," Cassian said. "I asked you to think of something." That was exactly what he'd done, of course. Asked. Not done it himself. Not taken charge or responsibility, just waved a hand and given the order and not considered what it might mean or cost. A wave of guilt drenched him. "We can't go through with it. This isn't fair to you. I will explain."
"Oh, don't worry about it," Daisel said. "You look fit to drop. Let's discuss it in the morning."
Cassian didn't have the mental acuity to argue. He managed to get his breeches off and piled his clothes on a chair, since he'd learned that leaving them on the floor meant picking them up off it again. He blew out the lamp,
and groped his way to the bed. It wasn't uncomfortable, really, and the sheets were not damp. But on the other hand, Daisel's body was a foot from his, if that, weighting the mattress. Cassian could feel his solid warmth without touching. He tried to balance as far over as possible because he knew an accidental touch would be bad, even if he found it hard to think why. And he wished he wasn't so sleepy, because here in the dark, with Daisel next to him, he didn't want to fall asleep. He felt they could talk long into the night if only he could stay awake. But consciousness was passing from his control, and his eyes fluttered shut to the sound of Daisel's quiet breath. He woke with an arm across him. The awareness was slow and confusing, a weight, a warmth. And then his mind sprang to life, and it was all he could do not to react. Daisel's arm, around his waist. The thought thudded through him, pulsing in his groin. Was he? Could he? He didn't move, careful to keep his breathing level and regular. A second later, he realized that Daisel's breathing was as regular as his own. It was deep and a little resonant. Actually, he was snoring. He was asleep. Of course he was. Cassian breathed out, slow and careful. Daisel was asleep. They'd shared a bed in a perfectly respectable sort of way, which he reminded himself was the only possible outcome of their association. Daisel liked laughing young ladies, or at least he was happy to elope with them. And even if he should happen to like gentlemen as well, he was Daisel Charnage, a gentleman of uncertain fortune and dubious reputation. The Duke had already made a mistake with a man like that. One should learn from experience. Then again, the nominal purpose of this month as Mr. Cassian was to have experiences from which he could learn. He allowed himself to dwell on that traitorous thought for a self-indulgent moment, then turned his mind firmly away. He should consider the day's duties. They'd lost a full day thanks to the accident. They had to get to Stratford. Oh, Lord, he'd promised to help the eloping couple and tangled both himself and Daisel in what, under daylight and a clear mind, now seemed a quite ludicrous course of action. He had a feeling he might have run briefly mad, through tiredness and strong ale and a powerful dislike of Sir James Vere. And also, a clear injustice. It was not right that a vicious rake should have guardianship over a young woman, and Miss Beaumont's position was intolerable. His information was admittedly from the lady herself, who might be unreliable, and Daisel, who was certainly erratic. But on the other hand, he'd met Vere. And come off worse, as Daisel had reminded him. That casual gossip about the Duke of Severn's humiliation had stung viciously, not just because it was proof the story had done the rounds, but also because Daisel knew it and, Cassian discovered, he didn't care to have Daisel regard him as a weakling or a figure of fun. A grunt from behind him. Who did I? Cass? Cassian made a display of yawning and gave Daisel's arm a shrug. He withdrew it, leaving Cassian bereft of warmth. I beg your pardon, I'm all limbs at night, or so people tell me. Not at all, Cassian said meaninglessly. Good morning. Morning, oh God, that woman, did we really agree to— Yes. Curse it. The ale here creeps up on a fellow. I had the same thought, Cassian said. You said something last night about your reputation, not wanting to be accused of eloping with another lady. More precisely, the same one twice. Even so, I think we should find an alternative plan, one that doesn't involve your name. Like what? Cassian hadn't got that far. I'll try to think of one. Daisel yawned jaw-breakingly. Don't worry about it, it makes no odds. I'm not going to be admitted to White's anyway, so I might as well help a damsel in distress. And if she actually marries Marston, that will deal with any scandal attaching to me. I'm more concerned about Sir James. The horsewhipping, obviously, but are there legal consequences for aiding an elopement? Cassian hadn't thought of that. If she'd agree to marry him, he might have a case for breach of promise against her if he wanted to be a laughingstock. But against people who helped her? I suppose he could mount a civil suit for damages, but I don't think it's likely. He would engage lawyers if he had to. I don't think you should worry about it.
I'm glad to hear it.
Dazel stretched. His foot brushed Cassian's leg. Just the lightest, careless touch, and Cassian couldn't help a twitch.
Sorry.
Actually, this might even be entertaining, and I'm always ready to put a spoke in Veer's wheel. But it strikes me we risk losing our trail while we muddy Miss Beaumont's.
That can't be helped, Cassian said. Perhaps I can start asking questions while you go and buy a marriage license under false pretenses and deceive a parson. Oh, God.
He couldn't help it. He started laughing and felt Dazel join him a second later, shaking so hard he could feel the mattress shift under them.
Oh, no, what's happened to me?
Well, it's not me, Dazel said. I wanted to be sensible. You're the one who asked me to light a vicar's.
That was your idea.
It was your idea to have the idea.
Dazel Charnage was calling him the reckless one.
Cassian felt quite dizzy and stupidly happy, and he didn't want to move. He wanted to stay here in the warm bed next to Dazel's warm body, talking and laughing and just accidentally touching.
We should get up,
he told himself aloud and swung his legs out of bed before he changed his mind. They made a hearty breakfast. Their temporary travelling companions seemed rather more nervy. Mr. Marston made rather a point of giving his name as Charnage to their hosts, and talking about their forthcoming marriage and the pleasures of Stratford-upon-Avon. Cassian had never been there, but based on their companion's speech, he felt confident that Mr. Marston hadn't either. It turned out the eloping couple had hired a chaise. That saved Cassian's own purse, he reflected smugly, without infringing the terms of the wager. The four of them set off very promptly. Mr. Marston took the reins, which left his intended, Dazel and Cassian, sitting inside. Miss Beaumont evidently felt obliged to make conversation.
So what business are you about in Stratford, Mr. Charnage?
Dazel glanced at Cassian, who said,
Pursuing some interests of mine, business interests.
Oh, that sounds interesting. Are you doing that too, Mr. Charnage? I didn't know you were a man of affairs.
I'm not.
Oh.
Miss Beaumont, would you care to speak about your situation?
Cassian didn't think he could bear any more small talk.
Of course, I wish you success in your, mission, but it strikes me, since Sir James has the right to force you to return to his house, you may need to consider what to do if he should catch you.
Is there anyone you can appeal to, trustees, relatives?
Her jaw set.
Do you think I haven't tried? My father appointed him my guardian because he had nobody else, and my trustee is only concerned with my fortune, not my wishes. And scarcely even that, the idle lump.
Cassian considered.
How long might it take you to reach Scotland?
Don't answer that, Dazel said. We don't want to know which way you're going. That way we can't let it slip.
Why do you ask?
Miss Beaumont added.
I was wondering how we might find out if Sir James catches you, Cassian said.
There were surely people he could write to.
Leo, perhaps. He'd doubtless be aware of Veer's movements and state of mind. Then again, Leo was unlikely to want to cross a man to whom he owed a lot of money. And also, while Cassian could write to him, he had no idea where he'd be over the next few weeks to receive any reply.
Miss Beaumont was looking oddly at him.
Why?
So we can help. If Sir James finds you, you'll need someone to get you out of his grasp. I'll be travelling for the next 3 weeks, but after that...
Perhaps you could write to me, care of a friend. Help me, how would you propose to do that?
I don't know yet, Cassian said honestly. But it is wrong that your guardian should press you to marry him, and I'm quite sure something should be done, if only bringing his behaviour to the world's attention.
He would inevitably bring Miss Beaumont's behaviour to the world's attention, Dazel pointed out. He enjoys exposing people's sins.
Oh, he does,
Miss Beaumont agreed resentfully.
It hides his own. It wouldn't matter if I could just get away. Once I have my fortune, I dare say people will stop caring about anything else. And if they don't, then I shall do very well without their good opinion. I want to have my own life and live it. And if other people disapprove of how I go about that, they can disapprove till their ears turn blue. Because I don't think a good reputation is any sort of consolation for a life of misery. So, if Sir James does catch up, Mr. Cassian, if he does, and if you do have any means of finding out and making a fuss on my behalf, whatever the consequences, I would be immensely grateful. I don't know why you're both being so dreadfully kind, she added, and her mouth twitched then, pulling down at the corners as though she might cry. He's chivalrous and I'm easily led, Daisel said, his cheerful tone pulling her expression back to a smile. You don't have much luggage, very wise, or will you be shopping on the way? Miss Beaumont responded to that opening with a brightness that didn't entirely convince. But she and Daisel kept up a light and meaningless chatter for long enough that the mood lifted. Cassian found it admirable on both their parts. He didn't feel quite able to join in. The coach was travelling at a very good speed indeed, and the road was appalling, bumpy and rutted and badly sloped. He would have liked to take the reins himself, or to join Mr. Marston on the box and see his handling of the horses. He didn't want to be stuck in this dark box, jolting, rocking, going too damned fast, because any moment there would be a crack and a lurch and they would crash. Daisel put a hand on his knee. Cassian looked down at the touch, startled. Daisel's hand resting on his leg, casual and warm. And as Cassian looked up again, Daisel gave it a squeeze and flashed him a reassuring smile. Mr. Marston's a good whip, he said aloud with just a touch of a question.
Oh, yes, excellent, Miss Beaumont said. Are you a nervous traveller, Mr. Cassian?
I'm very well. Cassian didn't want to talk about the crash, and hoped Daisel wouldn't. He looked out of the window instead at the landscape jolting by, and took comfort from Daisel's hand resting gently on his knee. They didn't crash. Mr. Marston's furious but competent driving got them to Stratford-upon-Avon in good time. It was a small town, rather low, with a mix of some fine new houses and some marvellous older ones, black-beamed in the Tudor style. It shouldn't take long for them to learn if Mr. John Martin had travelled through, but first they had a promise to fulfil. Accordingly, he and Daisel took a room at the White Swan on Rother Street, and then Daisel and Miss Beaumont trotted off to carry out the motions of a wedding. Mr. Marston set out to find a way up north that might evade pursuit, and Cassian was left to his own devices. It felt rather flat, and he realized he would rather have been an actor in the drama. It was, of course, best that he should stay out of the business. The Duke of Severn could not involve himself in what was, frankly, troublemaking, and Daisel was better suited and placed for the work. And yet, maybe, next time he faced a challenge, he would think how to address it himself, before he asked for help. He filled the time as best he could. He wandered around the town between the various coaching inns, inquiring about John Martin without success, and commanded luncheon at an ordinary with an ease that amazed himself once he was addressing his food. It had only been a few days, but he was becoming used to doing these things already. Or possibly he had so much on his mind that he didn't have room to worry about trivialities. He certainly had plenty to think about. The crash, Miss Beaumont's problems, which were in no way his, but in which he was nevertheless tangled. His quest to track down his missing ring, which was starting to seem very unlikely indeed, and the question of why that didn't seem to matter as much as it once had. Daisel. He could still feel a phantom hand on his knee, offering silent support for his unreasoned fear, and a phantom arm over his shoulder, close and comfortable in sleep. He wanted those touches to be real. This was foolish. Daisel was a wastrel who came of bad stock and attempted to elope with heiresses, and was currently making a mockery of the sacrament of marriage.
He needed to remember that those were bad things. He trudged on around the alehouses in the center of the little town till late afternoon, then returned to their inn, where he sat in the snug with a book, recuperating his energies after a frustrating day. As the many churches reached a loose consensus on 6 o'clock, Daisel reappeared.
Cass!
He looked bright-eyed, hair chaotic, buzzing with energy, and Cassian's moral resolutions were swamped like a sandcastle in the tide.
Good evening, what a day! Have you a drink? New book?
There's a bookseller here. I couldn't find the new novel by Mrs. Swan that you mentioned, but I picked up Nightmare Abbey, which I had not read.
How is it?
Terrible.
Excellent, excellent. Let me just command a drink. I'm parched.
Daisel waved at a barmaid.
What have you been up to?
Nothing as exciting as you, by the look of things. Daisel grinned.
I have been enjoying myself, I will admit. Miss Beaumont has a remarkable turn for skullduggery and an alarming ruthlessness. It was most entertaining.
We purchased a common license and had a conversation with the vicar, which I am quite sure he will remember. Miss Beaumont discussed our intention to marry and her flight from a wicked guardian with astonishing invention, and confided in his housekeeper that she intended to evade pursuit by dressing as a man.
I understand the vicar has no power to forbid the banns from being read or to refuse to marry us on grounds of disapproval alone, but good Lord, he looked like he wanted to.
I imagine he did.
Hoaxing vicars was not a respectable way to go on, and Daisel seemed to have enjoyed it a great deal.
Cassian was torn between very natural disapproval, the fear that he would not be able to hoax a vicar with any sort of aplomb, and a lurking regret he hadn't tried.
Do you think it will help?
If Vere manages to follow her tracks here, it's quite possible this will throw him off. And if it does, and they can get ahead, they may be able to lose the pursuit altogether.
Worthwhile, then. I hope it doesn't become common knowledge that she proposed to go about in breeches.
I don't think she'll care as long as she gets away with it. And as she remarked, once she has her money, nobody will worry about how she got it.
I hope she succeeds, Daisel added thoughtfully.
I'm glad I met her. I rather resented our last encounter, but she made me a very frank apology today, and I feel better about it now.
What happened? Cassian asked. The elopement, I mean.
It didn't seem to be very, That is, were you awfully fond of one another?
Do you want to know? It's not terribly edifying.
I should like to, if you don't mind.
It's the truth, so you might as well.
It was not a Romeo and Juliet affair, Daisel said, with a smile that wasn't quite as sparky as before.
There was a very tedious party in a house where I was staying. Vere was there and Miss Beaumont with him. She accosted me and proposed an elopement.
Cassian blinked.
Just like that?
More or less. We spoke briefly and she said she intended to get out from under Vere's thumb by any means necessary. That was apparently me.
I was in rather a bad situation myself, so a rich bride falling into my lap seemed a stroke of luck. As it turned out, she was using me to get out of the house, and intended to send me off separately by some ruse, with pursuit following in my direction while she fled with her swain, I assume Marston, since he clearly lacks the brains to arrange his own elopement. All's fair in love and war, I suppose. But Vere caught up with us very quickly. He retrieved her, and I had to leg it over a wall to get away.
Cassian blinked at that.
You left her behind.
Vere is her legal guardian, and he had 4 men with him, including one carrying the much-mentioned horsewhip. Of course I left her behind. What else could I do?
Daisel sounded a touch strained, as well he might. It wasn't, indeed, an edifying story. But the Duke had known he was Daisel Charnage when he hired him. He could scarcely complain when the details were filled in. And for all that, he'd seen Daisel act in the coach spill. The Duke of Severn was obliged to take an uncompromising line on what constituted acceptable behaviour without making allowances. Perhaps Mr. Cassian might be more understanding.
Well, I think you're extremely kind, he said.
Daisel hesitated.
What do you mean? He sounded rather wary.
I know it wasn't a very admirable way to go on.
I'd say she treated you exceedingly poorly if she intended you to suffer for her elopement and gain nothing by it.
I'm astonished you are ready to help her now. Yeah, well, I owe Vere a bad turn, Daisel said. And it wasn't so bad of Miss Beaumont, really. I would admit to being extremely annoyed at the time, but she was only 18, desperate for a way out, and I was a tool at hand. She did what she had to do. Don't we all? Cassian sipped ale, thinking about people who did what they had to. He'd had to do a lot himself. Had to take up the mantle of his father aged 6. Had to carry the burden of rank and wealth and lands. Had to live under scrutiny because of his position, and always be conscious that he was 7. The weight he lived under was crushing. He'd wanted to flee his position so much that he had become bosom friends with a notorious rascal under a false name. He had no idea at all what it was not to have money or people or prospects. He'd never been aimless or hopeless or desperate. He'd been lonely. He'd very often been lonely because he was a quiet man who didn't make friends easily or in great numbers, and his position had got in the way of friendships he could have made. If he'd been merely Harmsford at school, not 7, the other boys wouldn't have been instructed how to behave to him, and might have been readier to include him. Then again, if he enjoyed parties, or if he was minded to matrimony, or if he let it be known he wanted a crowd of companions to gamble with, he could have made all the friends he liked. In his place, Daisel would probably be on intimate terms with everyone from the Houses of Parliament to the Houses of Correction, and having a marvellous time. What might Cassian do in Daisel's place, the penniless son of a disgraced man? He hoped he wouldn't just drift around. He might become a horse trainer, he thought, or a stagecoach driver even, both of which would use the skills he'd acquired through owning a lot of horses, and having all the time he wanted to drive and ride. He wondered what skills George Charnage's son had beyond cutting profiles. I suppose you're right, he said. I maintain you're extraordinarily generous to help her a second time. Did they get away safely? I trust so. I handed Miss Beaumont over and waved goodbye, and that is the limit of my responsibility. Fair. Cassian contemplated his ale. Were you afraid I'd be shocked by that tale? You don't strike me as an unconventional gentleman, Daisel said. You're clearly concerned about appearances and correct behaviour, so, yes? That was rather lowering, and Cassian wasn't even sure why. He was conventional, mostly, and he was concerned about correct behaviour, and so he ought to be. And Daisel hadn't said it in a patronising way that might imply he was timid or boring, not at all. That was still how it felt. Well, I dare say I am, he mumbled. If ready to assist an elopement at the drop of a hat, Daisel added, a touch of amusement returning to his voice. So maybe not entirely conventional. Prepare to infringe convention when you dislike someone enough. Or when I like someone enough. Cassian batted back, and then felt a pulse of panic as Daisel's eyes widened. He hadn't meant to say that or admit it, and they were once again sharing a room tonight. I mean, I liked Miss Beaumont. I thought she was very, Yes, very, Daisel said, a grin twitching at the corner of his mouth. So, you can discard unwanted social strictures if you happen to like the person.
I have done that, now and again, Cassian said, astonished at his own daring.
The smile broadened temptingly.
That's good to know.
Chapter 7. Cassian was delightful when he was flustered. Daisel felt an overwhelming urge to fluster him some more. He needed to resist it. Cassian was clearly conventional, whatever he might claim, and you never knew when a conventional gentleman might decide he didn't associate with erratic elopers of notorious family. That was a horrible prospect. Daisel needed the £50, but far more than that. He wanted the growing friendship and purpose he had with Cassian. He'd been more desperate than he realized for something to do, and someone to do it with. And most of all, someone who wanted to do it with him. He could forget how lonely he was for a lot of the time, because he was mostly lonely in company. He was very good at drifting with the tide, washing in and out of inns and taprooms and other people's homes with the rest of life's flotsam, making himself pleasant, never showing he felt directionless and useless because that wasn't what people wanted to hear. Enjoyable temporary company was the most that anybody wanted of him, and he went along with that because crying and